Dive into Six Music on the BBC Sounds app and discover all our latest shows, sessions and mixes.
Six Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett and you're listening to a brand new series of The First Time here on BBC Six Music and BBC Sounds. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best loved musicians around and take a look at the first pivotal musical moments that made them who they are today.
Grinding on your lap, sweat beads on your teeth.
Today's guest is a remarkable vocalist, but amazingly, she never intended to be a professional singer. But throughout her youth, she soaked up lovers rock and reggae and R&B and jazz, all of which was interpreted through her own sensibilities and choice of collaborators and resulted in a series of brilliant EPs and two acclaimed albums. And despite her first release only arriving about 8 years ago, it's clear this is only the start of a brilliant career. I'm very happy to welcome to The First Time, Yasmin Lacey. And you just heard Yasmin with the track Wallpaper, lifted from her latest album, Teal Room. In this chat, we discuss Yasmin's formative musical influences growing up in Manor Park in East London and how the radio and family parties informed how she felt about music. And we cover her path to first becoming a musician, going from working at a children's charity in Nottingham to her first open mic gigs to being spotted by Giles Peterson's Future Bubbles project, a talent discovery and artist development scheme that's been developing unsigned talent for about 10 years now. We talk about her collaborators, Dave Akumu and Ezra Collective, with whom she recorded last year's banger, God Gave Me Feet for Dancing, and her love of Jill Scott, Soul to Soul, Lauryn Hill, and many more. But I started by asking Yasmin, as I did with all my guests, when was she first aware of music?
I think it's being in the car with my dad and the radio.
Right.
It was just like always an occasion to listen to the radio in the car, and it made every journey more exciting. And he introduced me to so much new music, I think, in that way. He used to look after me when I was little. My mum used to work in the day, so we used to just ride around in the car, like doing all these things. And he wasn't a big fan of TV, so he'd be like, we're not watching TV, but you can have the radio on. I'd be sitting on the kitchen side and he would listen to, I'm trying to think what radio stations, like, he used to listen to a lot of pirate radio. But it's hard to pinpoint, like, an early memory when I knew music was actually a thing. It's probably family parties, like, from when I was younger.
Okay, tell me about those.
We used to live on this Snow's Hill estate in Manor Park in this flat, and everyone would come around Christmas time. But, like, any family occasion, it doesn't have to be Christmas, could be a birthday, could be just a Saturday or whatever, or we'd all go to my nan's behind West Ham Football Ground. When the songs were put on, it's like, I don't know, it was just, like, a good coming together time. So it could be, like, Bob Marley or some other lovers rock. Like, if it was my dad and we were at our house, it would be like Barris Hammond. kind of artist, and I think it made a lot of like young memories. Yeah. Like it was soundtracking a lot. Everyone would sing, and it sort of meant everyone was together. So I think I liked that feeling of it, you know, like everyone singing Bob Marley in my mum's kitchen, or everyone sitting around on a Saturday listening to like reggae at my nan's house. Those are the kind of things that I think are like my earliest memories of like, wow, this makes people feel really good. And it brings people together, and it's kind of celebratory in some way.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got, like, if your earliest musical memories are about family, community, people coming together to enjoy yeah. music, it's not like I'm on my own to go and do this thing.
No, I didn't have those ones. It was yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I've got older brothers, right? And I'm, like, the youngest, and it was always about connection, I think, with music, even with them, because they used to buy a lot of records, and they would always listen to them together, and it's, like, to get in and to be cool with my brothers, like, I needed to know. So, like, early hip-hop stuff, you know, like Naughty by Nature, or, you know, all this stuff, I had to know it, because then I was allowed into the space. If I didn't know it, then I was doing so. It was about connecting with them, you know, and yeah. being part of that world. And yeah, so those are probably my early memories, all family, all everyone coming together.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because so much of your stuff is about collaboration. That's obviously where it comes
yeah,
from.
Yeah, I think it's that. I love that aspect of me. I think when I'm happy doing music, like when I'm in the studio with everyone, or when I'm on stage, like any of the bits in between are just a bit like...
What was the first music that you owned? Do you remember going out and kind of like picking something?
Our Price.
Yes, Our
Price. To be honest, like actually owned, it's probably Spice Girls, which I know is probably the same for a lot of people, just because, I mean, listening back, are there other songs that probably inspired me more? Maybe. But the ones that empowered me or excited me the most, Spice Girls Wannabe. When I heard that, I still remember I was like getting ready for school and they premiered it like on GMTV or something like that. And I went back into the living room and it was on the TV and I was like, sorry, but who are these girls? I need to be friends with them. And I want to be in the video with them, and I want to be running around, you know, like in the video, like that, running around that mansion, just like disrupting the party. And I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, that's a bit of me.
If you want to be my lover, you gotta get with my friends, make it last forever, friendship never ends.
Seeing that group of girls, that is the group of girls that were in the playground, like I'm on my way to school and I'm about to join that group. So it's like made you feel, it was aspirational because you started seeing yourself like they were wild and it wasn't like so prim and proper and there was a character for everybody-ish. And I was like, yeah, I'm obsessed with this.
Let's go to one of your artists. Let's start with Soul to Soul. When did you first become aware of Soul to Soul? When did it become a thing for you?
I feel like in the black community, Keep On Moving is like such an iconic anthem. You know what I mean? I think it represents resistance. I think my dad was obsessed with Soul to Soul. I've got like early memories of like listening to it before we went to Carnival, particularly that song. And it's so funny, I actually met Jazzy B the other day and I was like telling him, like I was like, this is so iconic. Like we was on this like chat together and I was like, this is such a anthem in my like, you know, when you think of those iconic songs that like soundtrack your life, that's definitely one of them. I love the fact that they were like a melting pot of very different sounds. I feel like it's like partly the sound of Windrush, you know, in London. I think it's like other London sounds. And they were so versatile, and I think that inspired me as well. And I was obsessed. Like, I was like, I love the cover. That's definitely one that my dad had on record. So, yeah, I absolutely love Soul to Soul.
For me, it was like, I mean, I was young, but I remember listening to Soul to Soul and listening to Nene Cherry and just going, well, this is British. Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Like, normally only American records sound this good.
Yeah.
Wow. What is
that's
this?
That's such a good point.
You know what I mean? Because yeah, those records just sound, the production is so good. They yeah, sound so dynamic.
Yeah. I've thought about a lot of American music influencing me, but I think, like, it's so interesting what happens over here and where everyone meets in the middle. Like, that's how you get all these, like, really exciting genres, jungle, lovers rock, you know, like, yeah, so I love it.
First gig you went to?
I think I saw Omar in a park in Newham when I was like quite young. My dad had taken me. It was like some sort of community event. Now looking back, I'm like, that's kind of crazy because he was like kind of big when I was little. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and I think we saw him at this community kind of event in Newham. I think that was my first concert.
A glass of cold champagne wine. The rug that we lie on feels divine. And there's no parallel.
There, but I think my mum and my auntie took me and my cousins to Smash Hit Awards once.
Wow.
And I don't really know how we got that, or maybe it was like some, you know, when you used to have like things in the paper, like clips all the coupons you get to.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. But that was my first, I think that was my first concert, Omar, yeah.
Right. When did it first dawn on you that, like, well, that's a thing, I could do that. I could be on stage.
See, that's the thing when I think, like, recalling, like, musical first, it's kind of difficult because I came to music so much later in my life. I didn't earmark these early experiences as, like, these, like, formative things, you know? I didn't start making music till I was about 27.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm 37 now. And so it's a lot of later music, I think, that has heavily influenced me, or, like, later experiences where I was like, this is what I want to do. I mean, the thought of being on stage absolutely petrified me.
Well, I was going to ask you about this, because, I mean, I was going to ask you when you first went on stage to perform, and if, because you've talked about, like, stage fright was a very real thing.
Yeah, it was really real.
How Rick,
I mean,
me.
It's still pretty real right now.
It's not over real. It yet.
Not over, I'm not over it yet, but I remember my first gig. I got my first gig because I'd made, like, two songs, and I sort of put one of them on SoundCloud, but I knew some of the musical community in Nottingham, and I was at a pub in the smoking area, and I was like singing because I've had a couple of drinks, and someone heard me, and she ran this little open mic night called Acoustical in Nottingham, and she was like, you need to come and sing. And I think that after a few wines, that sounded like a great idea, so I definitely said yes. And I remember like waking up, and a couple of days later on Facebook, I saw it was like, you know, Yasmin Lacey. I think maybe I had my entire full name at that point. And I saw it on a flyer, and I was like, I guess I'm doing this then. And I remember she like messaged me, say, have you got a 20-minute set? And I had no idea how long my songs are, because I'd never done them before. I went, yeah, I think so.
No way.
And I had like three songs, which I tried to spin out. I met this guy, and he was playing guitar for me. And I remember thinking, in my normal life, like, there's nothing about me. Like, I'm not that shy socially. But I remember thinking, like, whoa, this has winded me. I got there. It was like a tiny cafe called Alley Cafe in Nottingham. You know, you're sitting like maybe like one seat away from the audience. So it's like super intimate. I couldn't look up. The entire time I just couldn't look up, and I was like, I'd never experienced this, like, whole body, like, my leg was twitching. You know what I mean? I couldn't look up, and I was just like, this is mental. Like, who would want to do this? And at the end, people were like, that was really good, really like your voice. And I remember thinking, right, well, they're doing that thing, what you do to encourage people when you see they're really nervous. And I was like, I couldn't trust them. And I felt so painfully ill after that. I was like, right, I am never doing that again. But if someone asks me, I'll take that as a sign. I'm never going to try and do that again for
really?
Myself, because it was so uncomfortable.
You made that decision, like...
After the first gig, I was like, I can't tell whether they're just like having me on here and being like, bless you, you know what I mean? Like, well done, or they actually think it is good. And I was like, I can't go after this. I need a sign. So I was like, if I get asked to have another gig, then I'll do it, because I'll take that as a sign that, you know, that the promoter doesn't want to embarrass themselves. And it just kind of went like that for a little while. But there was something really liberating about sharing your story. I think my first song was like quite cheeky and a bit naughty. And I remember someone commenting on it, and they were like saying, oh, I get that feeling. And I was like, wow, maybe this is the thing. Maybe that's what how it links back to my first experience with music. Like hearing my aunties like talk about certain songs when we're around my nan's house, and that coming together of people around music. That's what I noticed at the gigs. And I think that's what I started to like.
But I quite like that. It's not like you are, I am destined for this.
No.
It's like, I quite like the fact that it happened, I hate the word, but it happened organically. It just happened
yeah.
because it fell that way.
Obviously, I'm really pleased that it did. It's kind of changed my life, but yeah, it's just like, I suppose, just taking a bit of a risk.
Let's do another artist. Where should we go next? Lauryn Hill. That first Lauryn Hill album, I guess.
Yeah. I remember just hearing it and feel like, okay, well, this is like my guide to life, no? Like, this is like, I'm just going to use this. Like, I'll just use this. Like, it's literally the, like, the education that we weren't getting at school. I think it was like seeing like this young black woman. I was like obsessed with her. Like, she was beautiful. She looked strong and vulnerable at the same time. Her lyrics were crazy. The skits on the album blew me away as well. It felt so personal. And I remember listening to those songs and just thinking, like, I just immediately, it meant something to me. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like, okay, well, this is how I'm going to understand life. Do you know what I mean? This is how I'm going to understand heartache. This is how I'm going to understand, like, learning to love and respect yourself. And I was like, okay, these are my guidelines. Like, this is...
That's it. Someone's done it now.
Yeah, someone's
Here
done it.
Like, this That's is my North Star.
Yeah, exactly. Still now. But I think that experience of music was definitely a first for me. I'm like, oh, this is what it can do. Like, this is the power of these songs. I was like slightly old enough to have like different experiences. And I don't know, it gave me something to aspire to. Watching that her as a woman, not necessarily as an artist, just as a woman carrying herself through life, I was like, this is a bit of me. Like, yeah, it was so iconic, the cover as well, with the desk with her face etched in. I was like, I'm happy to sit at the school of Miss Hill and basically take it all in, you know.
Change it comes eventually. Yeah. Everything. your first time in a studio, which is an intimidating thing, because all of a sudden it's like, right, you know that thing that you've just been doing, there's red light and now you've got to do it now.
Yeah.
That's a whole different
it's
skill.
It's so scary.
It's really.
Suddenly, why 5 seconds apart do I not have a voice? I could sing it like 5 seconds ago. My very, very first time I'd ever been in the studio was like super romantic. I sort of fell into music by falling in love. You know, I was seeing someone and he always used to say, like, I bet you can sing. He used to be like, nah. And he's like, I bet you've wanted to though. Nah. Choir, not really. And I was like, why do you keep saying that? And he's like, because of the tone of his speaking voice, I bet there's something in it. And he used to beg me to go in the studio and make a song. But I think people forget that don't make music. Like, that is petrifying. What, go in there and say what? Like, if you never felt compelled in your spirit to write a song,
yeah,
you know, you go in the studio, you're like, well, what would I say? Anyway, my first studio experience was in Nottingham. I only started making music in Nottingham. And it was in the Lace Market, which is also my second name, Lacey. So I was like, okay, there's something in this.
It's a sign.
And the studio was above old, like, where they had the old lace kiln. So it's like, you can see that they were still in the bottom of the building. And his studio was in the top. And I went in and it was covered in candles. And he started making this beat. He's like, can you hear something? I was like, yeah. And I sent him to the shop to get more wine, because obviously lubrication helps the creativity.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then I was in the booth and I was just like trying out some sounds. I think I just said the first things that came off the top of my mind. He came back, he ran it back, and he was like, whoa, that sounds like a song. And he was like, yeah. And he was like, your vocals are dry. And I was like, oh. So he doesn't like it. And he was like, no, as in they're dry, as in I've not put hardly anything on them. And I was like, wow, it sounds like a real song. And I was so fascinated that in one moment, like, everything that happened in that room can lead to, you know, a song. I was really excited by that. That still excites me now in the studio. You go in, you can be in whatever mood. You're with someone you don't know or someone that you do know really well. Everything that happens once you enter that studio space can be like the thing that ignites the song, you know, or that triggers the conversation, that brings you to the hook, or, you know, that leads you down to listen to this old 70s record where you're like, that, it's that pocket, you know. And I was just like, this is crazy, because I think it feels like magic. That and my first jam session were like, this is incredible.
It's one of the things I love about music. You, as you say, you can go in and there isn't anything.
Yeah.
And then after, it could just be 4 or 5 minutes, there's a thing.
There's
something
a thing.
Exists. And it might be good, it might be awful. It kind of doesn't matter, because there's a thing now.
Yeah.
And that thing could only have been done by those people at that point.
Exactly.
In whatever mood they're in. You're right, it is magical.
Yeah, and I was just like, yeah, I think that was the thing where I was like suddenly a little bit obsessed with it. I was like, this is crazy. You're telling me you can just make stuff up? Like, you can just like, yeah.
It's all making it up though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, it is.
Like, this is how you do it. No, just...
No, and I think that, like, that's also a blessing. Sometimes I feel like such an imposter, because I never had that journey where it was like every day, like, going to my singing practice from 7 and stuff. But I think maybe everything in its right time, and what I was at that first studio session was open and willing to play, and I didn't need to be good at it. So it just allowed me to just like do some things, try yeah. some things out, you know.
Tell me a bit about, I was looking at, because the Future Bubblers program, it's 10 years old this
yeah,
year.
Yeah,
it's 10 years.
That's crazy.
It's his 10th birthday, which obviously Giles, friend of, you know, the station, obviously.
Yeah.
You sort of said that that program gave you direction.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about what you meant by that.
So I would say, talking of first, that was like my first experience of someone approaching me like properly like an artist, like, what are we going to do with this, you know. I played a gig in Nottingham and they'd come to Nottingham, and my friend didn't really explain. He's like, I'm going to put you on at this gig, you've got to play it. I was like, yeah, all right, sound. I didn't really know. It was like, this woman's coming from London, and I was like, okay, cool. And I was so nervous before, and she was like, you seem really nervous, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. She had a really nice energy about her, and she was there with Selassie as well, who also does Future Bubblers. And I sang, and then afterwards she was like, you know, I think you should really, you know, apply. And I was like, at the time I was like running a children's show, and I was like, babe, like, that sounds lovely. I'm kind of taking quite a few kids on summer camp tomorrow, and I really don't have the, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be playing, like, I'm going to be playing outdoor games in the woods and I'm not going to sleep for the next 3 weeks. So, and she was like, no, you must. And I don't know, I was like curious, you know, I'd played a few gigs, maybe only just into like double figures of gigs. And I was curious because I'd never had this training or like support around my music. I was like, maybe I should do it. Like, maybe they can tell me a few things. And I got onto it. And I remember, like, we sat down and she was like, so what are you going to do? Are you going to make... And I was like, whoa, like, I guess I can do something with this. And, you know, like, shortly after I made my first record. So, yeah, that was, like, a crazy first. It was, like, they were taking me seriously. And like, you know, you as an artist. And I remember thinking, it's so funny. Like, they keep calling me an artist. That's hilarious.
Tell me about that first release, then. Can you remember it coming out? You remember getting, like, a first play?
Yeah. I remember Giles playing it, and I was like, oh, my God. I nearly saw it. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, this is... crazy. And again, that was like, I was at an after party. My mate was like, yeah, do you know what you should do? You should do it on a record. And I was like, I want to do that. And he was like, because it's iconic. And I was like, it is bloody iconic. I was like, imagine like later on in life, I'll just be like in my kitchen. I'll be like, oh, what that? That's my record on the wall. Like, you know, for just like laughs and just like as a cute thing to do. And I got my friend to, she was an artist, she painted the cover. She painted this like acrylic bit, and then we transferred it onto the thing. And sometimes I think like it's probably for the best. When I look at the first song I ever released and that EP Black Moon, probably for the best that I wasn't thinking it, because now like I think about the first line, I was like, I don't know where I got the confidence from really to just say that. I did it thinking no one was going to hear it. And so I was just able to say, like, whatever I wanted. I remember, like, put them on Bandcamp and, like, it emails you when someone's bought... And I was like, someone's bought it. And I remember when I got to 5, it blew my mind. I was like, this is crazy. Like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to do an autobiography. Like, someone's bought 5 records. Like,
I've made it.
And I was like, this is crazy.
Black Moon. Black Moon, Black Moon, Black Moon, Black Moon, Black Moon. Slide in between my eyes.
It was like this really special moment. I was like, oh, something that I just did for me to put these thoughts in a place, and because it was fun and because it was like a nice thing to do after doing, like, you know, with the charity, like social services meetings and these really high pressure situations. I was like, well, this is fun. And I was like, this is really cute. And then I was like, wow, people are actually listening to it. And I was like, you know, there's part of you that's like, is everyone just being really nice to me? You know,
she's a bit rubbish.
She's a bit rubbish, but let's give her some encouragement. You know, bless her.
But it's good. Yeah, I mean, it's plainly obvious that EP was the kind of, you could feel it was the start of something.
Yeah, I thought it was the start of something, and I was like really proud to have brought an idea to completion. It was exciting to me to finalise an idea. You have a melody, and then the melody becomes these lyrics. The lyrics are now pressed on this physical thing that can just, like, live, like... And I was like, wow, I feel really proud of that. I want to do that again. Yeah.
It's funny, because you don't kind of... It's not that you don't know what you're doing with the first release. Those first releases by almost any artist, you take it really seriously. Because you don't really know about the bigger picture. Yeah. You just sort of do it.
Yeah.
And, like, I think... Almost any artist, oh, can I go back and do that again?
Oh, literally.
But you can't.
I mean, the biggest bands in the world.
If you found the biggest band in the world, you can go back and do a recording like you did when you were like, when you first started. Everyone would go, yeah, I'd love to do that. Without knowing anything else about it. It's a really beautiful moment.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And I was just like, wow, like, you just get to express yourself. Like, that is such a pleasure and a privilege all in one. Just express yourself. That's all anyone's asking for you in the room. Crazy. Like, record one.
Tell me about Jill Scott.
My brother's dad is American, and he used to bring a lot of American music to me. They used to listen to a lot of, like, hip-hop and, like, gangster rap, which, to be honest, didn't really settle with me, the gangster rap side of things. I was like, I didn't really feel particularly taken by that. But I remember he introduced me to Jill Scott, and... I think it was her poetry. I was like, wow. It gave me goose pimples. I felt seen, like reading some of her lyrics, like, and that's the thing, like, that's when I was like started to want to like delve deeper. It's like, this is the point I was like, I need to read this, I need to hear it, and I also like need to properly listen and take these in. I felt empowered by listening to Jill, and like, I think my brother saw maybe that I like, through music, wanted to give me like some of those like little role models, I suppose. Okay, yeah. Like, you know, and he was like, I think you'll like this. I think Jill Scott is incredible. She's just like a mother to me, you know what I mean? Like, if you listen to like He Loves Me and like E Minor, yeah, like at the end it gets really operatic what she can do with her voice, but then also so soulful, also so relaxed, you know what I mean? And I was like, I love her storytelling, like getting in the way with the skits in it and stuff like that. And I was just like, storytelling became really important then. Poetry, emotion became really important to me then, about how you deliver words, you know? And yeah, I feel really inspired by her.
You love me, especially different every time. Excited by all your cologne and your hands, your smiles, your intelligence. You woo me, you caught me, you tease me, you please me, you school me, give me things to think about, invite me.
Morning Matters, maybe, like, that was one of the ones that kind of widened the picture.
Yeah.
People, maybe it was the first thing that people heard of yours. Tell me a bit about that song, because it's still, it stands up really beautifully, and it was their door into your work.
Yeah,
think, for
yeah,
lots of people,
yeah,
right?
For lots of people. Yeah. That EP and that song is really important to me, because that was the first time a record came together really quickly for me. And I think, like, because I wrote it to get me out of a funk, I was like, come on, like, da 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 da. I made that record with Craigie, and he really, like, pushed me to be like, so what are we doing, you know? Like, what are the sounds here? Had this, like, 3-second loop of a sound that I really was like, yeah, we're going with it, we're going with it, you know?
Don't
think about it, just do it. He's very much like, yes, yeah, like, go, go, go. And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking Morning Matters. He's like, great, love it, let's go. And, you know, I think that everything happens in its right time, and that third record definitely allowed me to step into my artistry a bit more. And then I was like, before ever making an album, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a really nice process. We sketched out the song, and then I invited the band in to like play it, and we chopped it, and it was just fun. It, like, that whole project. So I made it with Craigie, I made it with another song on there is Moses Boyd, and Jordan Hadfield, who used to be in my band. And I think that was like a few sessions. Like, that's it really. Like five.
Wow.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, this is also my mind, let's go. And think it was my first time, like, okay, this is what happens when you really tap in.
Yeah.
And just focus and not overthink things. So I loved that one. And it gave me many first after that, I think, that record. That was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Money not happening to me, it's happening for me. The cycle's never ending. That's why now I befriend it. What you leave at nighttime will come find you in the sunrise. Mornings matter to me. And even when it's miserable, thankful for the day to come. Oh, oh, oh. And even when it's
First meeting David Kumu. You're talking about people that like are just wonderful and wonderful to work with.
Yeah, this that's a good one. So Dave is like one of the coolest people anyway.
Yeah.
You meet him, I just saw this like big guy, the dreads, the glasses, like
the presence.
The presence, you know, so cool and relaxed in his energy. And he was like, "Hi, nice to meet you." And I was like, "I like it." And I was like, "Okay, cool." It was a really brief in passing. And then we had our first session together. And we went and had a cig at Twinkle Park near his studio in Deptford. And we sat in the park and talked about music. And I learned from Dave the importance of the environment when you're making music. You know, that was like the first. He was like, you know, I was like sort of rushing around. I was like, "Sorry I'm late," because I'm late to everything. "Sorry I'm late," and da-da-da-da. He's like, "It's fine." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, do you need me?" And he was like, "We're going to have some coffee." And do you know what I mean? We had a coffee. We joked about things. I remember the first time that I made... I can't remember what I said, but the first time I made him proper belly laugh, and he was like, fell off the chair, and I was like, "Oh, this is brilliant. Okay, this is going to work." I've won him over. We talked loads about music. He talked about his love for Grace Jones and like just falling in love with like creating stuff. And he was like, "You know, we need to make this like a good environment for play." And I was like, "Okay." And it was like, I don't think we made any music. A lot of the people that I have long-standing musical relationship, I don't make music with them in the first time I meet them, really.
Really?
No, we just sat and chatted. We had some lunch. I smoked some cigarettes, had coffee, had lots of coffee, played some songs, laughed a lot. I don't think we made any music that first session. Same with, like, another producer I always work with, Melazed. First time I met him, we just chatted. Miles James for this latest album. Went to the studio.
Just feel it out.
Just feel it out. Drink some coffee. Catch some jokes. Yeah. Just catch joke, you know?
From my lover, broken promises, many lessons learned. Like a song.
So when Voice Notes comes out, like, obviously it gets this really brilliant reception. But as someone that maybe wasn't intending to be doing this, as someone that fell into it in a way that was just a really smooth path of where you felt like you should be, when you get people going, "Oh, this is great, this is brilliant, you know, the review's really good, oh, you know, she's going to be this, she's going to be that," was that quite uncomfortable? Because all of a sudden everyone's looking at you.
Yeah.
And they're not just listening because they like it, listening because they've been told it's really good or they've been told they should be listening.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the eyes and the attention is on you.
You know what? For the first album, it's like the first. So I had no expectations. Right. I was sort of excited by the idea that I'm putting together more than three or four songs, you know? So I didn't necessarily feel that at the first one. I felt that more the second one. But, you know, I always will be my biggest critic, I suppose. So it's nice to hear those things, but it doesn't necessarily always stick. So I hear it, but I'm not like, "Right, everyone thinks I'm amazing now, work's done." You know what I mean?
You're good at separating that from...
Yeah, because I feel like the records I released, it's like everything that I needed to say in that. You know, there was a lot of breakup stuff in that one, a lot of like, you know, inner turmoil stuff. And so it's like, when I have this relationship with the record, it's like, okay, maybe I've said everything I've got to say. Full stop, we've pressed it. Okay, cool. So now it's yours now. I think the nicest thing about the commentary from people is just like hearing their stories, like when people be like, they'll listen to Bad Company and they'll be like, you know, I've got my own Priscilla and they made me do this. And some people are like, who's Priscilla really? I'm like, a figment of my imagination. Or some people will be like, old sea glass meant this to me. I'm just fascinated by the stories. And sometimes that out-of-body experience, I'm telling you about, like, listening to Keep On Moving with my family and how I can think of, like, certain birthdays or certain, like, family celebrations where it's like, that's the soundtrack. When people come and tell you, like, when I listen to this or From a Lover, you know, like, that's me and my now wife's song, I'm like, okay, that's mad, because that must be playing a role in your life that my favourite songs play for me. So it's really special and it does, you know, but I just try not to focus on that stuff too much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I woke up in my head, lay on Priscilla's lap. And yes, it's been a while, she's noticed that I ain't been smiling. How did she find the keys to my blush? Cause I went militant. The last time she left, she's kind of my old friend. Maybe an acquaintance, sometimes neighbors. Really, I don't know what she wants this time. Suppose it's nice to have company when I flash back in mind, no. Although the weather demon on my shoulder, and she's smoking on my
When did you first meet the Ezra gents?
Oh, yeah, that was a fun gig. I loved them, and I think, is it Chapter 7? The first album, Ezra. I think they had this song that I used to listen to with Ty or something like that. Anyway, I listened to their music, and they were coming to Nottingham, and I got to support them at the Bodega in Nottingham.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous. I really didn't want to see them before, because I didn't want it to throw me off, so I just sort of like hid downstairs in the Bodega, like, but then I played the show, and afterwards James, actually from Ezra Collective, he goes, ah, I forgot my record. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I've got your record and I really wanted you to sign it. And I was like, what? Like, no way. He was like, yeah, I really like what you're doing. And Femme was like, in a very Femme way, he's like, you're right, yeah. And like, and he was just like, yeah, I love it. He was like, you smashed it kind of thing. We chatted a little bit after the gigs and they said that I should come and see their other shows. And, you know, like, I ended up the end of that year playing a show in New York with Joe. It was just me and him. It was like one of my favourite shows. I love playing with him in that way, you know. Yeah. It's like, and our relationship has just grown since then, you know. Like, I've known the boys like nearly, what, 8 years now? Yeah. Maybe more. Femi's always sort of like offered advice, you know, like, whenever, if you ever need anything or whatever. And they've also invited me to the studio a lot, and I went once but I never really finished the song. And then it's so mad that the song that came together, Everything in Its Right Time, that song came together. We got to the studio about 8 o'clock at night and left at 2 in the morning, and that was it, really. Like, it was a really quick turnaround. It's really weird to think that now we're supporting them on that show, and then it's like we have that song together.
Birds flying high, I don't know how they feel. People outside in search of something real, and I need mine to get me started. Something to get me started. Got to get me started. Give me baseline. Give me dollar wine. God gave me feet for dancing, and that's exactly what I'll do. Give me high life. Give me good times. God gave me feet for dancing. Thank you.
was lovely kind of watching that song kind of grow and grow and connect. Yeah. It does feel like, it doesn't surprise me it was done quick, because it feels like it's got that energy of just kind of joy in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was a quick turnaround. Femi called me on Sunday. I went to the studio on Tuesday. It was done by Wednesday morning. That's it. And I think that that was kind of what was nice about it. I think had I had this session booked in with Ezra like 3 months in advance, like, yeah, when we're going
think about it,
I would be thinking about it. This needs to be the best vocal of my life. I need to really nail it. I need to impress the boys, whatever. But I didn't have the window to do that. So it was like, okay. I said to Femi, I was like, I really like it. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do on it. Like, but hopefully it comes together. And I'm buzzing that it did.
Whereas Teal Dreams feels like something that was much more thought out, much more like, okay, well, I'm going to pull that from here and I'm going to think about this thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to get visual inspiration and not overthink it, but think a lot more about
it. I had to think more about that one, yeah.
Why did you feel now's the time to get more analytical on yourself?
Well, I think I felt the pressure a little bit, I've got to be honest. Like, first album, I don't know what it's like to make an album, so I'm going to make it, and then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you've made it, and then, oh, people like this album. I was like, that was like a wonderful surprise. That was amazing, and I had such a fun year after that album came out, like going everywhere, like meeting those people, doing those shows. And then everyone was like, oh, second album. Come on then, what are you doing?
Thing. It's a real thing.
Come on. And there's like, oh, you know, like, I bet you got to have it, and I bet you got to have this. And I was like, oh my, like, what the hell? Like, I was like, now I'm scared. And actually,
I
was fine before. Now I'm saying all these things. What are you expecting on the second album? Anyway, I said I was working on it, but I wasn't, because I had a bit of a block, I think, from that. And I went away January of this year and I was like, right, I'm just going to go away and just like hope like something magic's into my system.
Where did you go?
I went to Thailand and I did a lot of sitting by the sea. This sounds so whimsy and woo, like, oh, I just sat by the water. But I do my best thinking by the sea. It doesn't have to be in Thailand. It can be Brighton, it can be Margate, it can be
Spaghetti Junction,
Skegness.
Canal.
It can be the canal, just like a running body of what it can. But I was there and my housemate had been saying like, I don't know loads about art, but she works in galleries and she was like, this is an artist you're going to love. Her name is Danielle McKinney. Check it out. And I went away and I was like looking at it and I was looking at all these paintings and they were like, felt like they were like mirroring certain scenarios I was in. And then I saw this one and it's like a woman in a teal room in a blue robe. I was living in a teal room at the time. Like, it was literally painted teal and I was like, oh wow, like, this is me, and this is that space that I'm making the music from. And everyone was like, sorry Yasmin, where are you? And I was like, I'm on holiday. They were like, you're gonna come back and do this album? And I came back, and I think the break was what I needed. I came back and then we started end of February and then we finished in July, so it came together quicker than, you know, the other album, but definitely still some time. And I wanted to like push myself. I had lots of like visual ideas of this one, you know, and like some weird dreams that went with it. Like, I was obsessed with the idea of like making this music video in this working men's club where it's like for Two Steps, where, you know, Two Steps is about, you know, this kind of like back and forth push pull when someone's not really into someone, but they're kind of messing around with them. And I wanted to depict that like bad communication in this dancing. That's like, it's a line dancing class. It's in a working men's club. I had this idea at 7 a.m. in the morning. So I sent everyone a voice that everyone's like, oh my God, here we go. And that was like a first as well, being able to like have a vision and bring it to life and being able to commit to it. And it was a bit out there, you know, it wasn't like just a cute performance video. It was like, I had this very clear idea. And so that was a first to start bringing those things into the musical world. But it was fun. It was fun to do it, you know.
You're back in the deep end. I know you've been sinking. Bet you your tongue's tied up. I guess you better fall back. Itch that I won't scratch. Little bit of my shining star. Don't take it personal, but you're wasting my time, fool. All of my girls got stacks. If you're going 2 steps forward and a 3 steps back, you can be on your way.
next? Is the next question.
Album three.
I finished it. I'm starting it.
No, I'm not starting it. No, but I had like some big gaps last year of not really going to the studio. And I realised like that's probably why I felt a bit mental. I think it's better that I'm in the studio than not in the studio, because it's the bit that I like, and you just like keep everything fluid.
Yeah.
But I have an idea of the record that I want to make next, but it's going to take some time, and I need to give myself the time to do it. But it would be nice to collaborate more, you know, step outside my comfort zone.
Who do you want to collaborate with? This could be a great opportunity to shout them out. Yeah, totally.
I'd love to work with the boys again. It'd be nice to work with Ezra Boys again. It would be nice to work with Sampha. I'd love to work with Sampha. I really, really would. And just as a wild card, let's throw it out there, I'd love to work with Jill Scott. I mean, that feels like saying I'd love to work, you know, but you never know. Like,
manifest it.
Yeah, manifest it. But I'd love that.
And the final thing, what song should we play out on? You can pick the final song.
Just of any song ever?
Any song ever. It can be something you've always loved. It can be something you've just thought of just right now.
This song is really special to me. When I started to make music, Hiatus Coyote came into my life, and I was blown away by like the amalgamation of sounds. Like, I think you can really hear that's a band with a wide spread like influences, you know, within them. That's one of my favourite albums, Talk Tomahawk. And when I started making music, I'm like, okay, it's never to copy, but I want to make things that make me feel like how that album made me feel. And The World It Softly Lulls is like very much cemented itself as one of my safe songs. So it's like, you know, I've got like D'Angelo, Spanish Joy, I have like Lauryn Hill, Everything's Everything, and also The World It Softly Lulls by Hiatus Coyote, because it's just beautiful, and this is a really good one to go out on, I think.
Then that's what we'll finish on. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for having me.
Was Hiatus Coyote, The World It Softly Lulls, taken from their 2012 debut album, Talk Tomahawk. The final choice of my guest on The First Time today, Yasmin Lacey. And that's the end of the show. I'll be back soon with more brand new episodes of The First Time. And of course, you can listen back to previous First Time shows from this series, featuring Imogen Heap, Gavin Rossdale from Bush, Rat Scabies from The Damned, and shows from the archive, including my conversations with Dave Grohl, Janelle Monáe, Tom York, and our show with the late, great Jimmy Cliff. Until next time, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.